Dre Harrison here with episode 552 of Motorsport 101. As I'm sure you can forgive us, this probably isn't the appropriate type of podcast for us to hit up a normal sort of half funny intro we normally do on the show. I'm going to openly admit this as lead editor and whatnot. We're kind of winging this one, and it's not for nice reasons, unfortunately. This was going to be a podcast where we will talk at length about MotoGP's latest round at Thailand. We just had the beer around this past weekend. And as newsworthy as that was, unfortunately, for more grim reasons, motorsport doesn't really matter so much in this instance. If you've been keeping an eye on the news in the last few days, Eastern Spain has been hammered by Storm Dana, a horrible tropical storm that has hit the eastern side of Spain. Valencia in particular has been hit particularly hard by this. A year's worth of rainfall fell in just a matter of hours on that side of Spain, and it's caused horrendous flooding, terrible conditions, a huge amount of damage, and sadly, at current count, over 160 people have lost their lives over in that part of the world. Now, first and foremost, of course, on behalf of all of us here, me, RJ, and Cam, our thoughts, our prayers, and condolences to everyone affected over there. I've seen the video footage. It is horrifying to watch. It's hard as motorsport fans and as sports fans in general to read the news and not immediately think of the motorsport connotations that come with that, because as you all know, if you're listening to this on a regular basis, MotoGP's title decider is next weekend, the weekend after, I should say, at Valencia. And well, there's no getting around it. There is a lot of doubt in regards to that. So whether that weekend can go ahead, we'll talk about that a little bit more in a bit. But I just wanted to dedicate the first couple of minutes of the show to at least acknowledge that, because we are so quick in a sports world to go straight to the sporting impact on these things. And I think the human impact of it often gets left behind, because this is a horrible tragedy. It's a huge natural disaster. And I actually found it a little bit noxious seeing a lot of people in sports immediately go, well, what about the title decider? And I'm like,
In moments like this, I mean,
like, that shit can wait, in my opinion.
It's motorsport worth discussing in this moment? No, it's not. It's the human element of it, and as you pointed out, Dre, it's a horrible situation for that area of the world at the moment, and we're still not done finding out about, you know, the effects of this. I'm sure in the coming weeks, more will arrive.
Indeed. I just wanted to just take a few minutes out to acknowledge that. I will post a link to the Red Cross in the description of this podcast. If you can, please donate anything that you can towards the relief effort that's going on over there. If you're an F1 fan, I'm sure you can relate to what happened in Imola last year when that race got called off for very similar extreme flooding in the region. So forgive us as we talk a little bit about motorsport for the next half hour or so in regards to that, a little bit of time and a little bit about what happens next, because we have to talk about it, unfortunately. Well, I wish we didn't have to for many, many reasons, but we have a duty to you, our listeners, and a duty to everything. And my philosophy on M101 has always been, we don't shy away from the tough topics. We talk about them because I think talking is the best way we can deal with it. So forgive us for that, but hopefully you'll get something out of it over the next half hour or so. Now, to lay out the situation, we don't fully know what the situation is going to be. There's also one other major motorsport event that was due to take place at Valencia very soon, and that was the Formula E pre-season test next week at Valencia. Very important test. The all-women's test is going to be next, was due to be next week, as well as the first proper running of the Gen 3.5 Evo car that was meant to be taking place there, the attack charging unit. So a huge part of their championship was due to be taking place there next weekend. That is no longer happening. Formula E has put out a statement in the last couple of hours, basically saying that nope, that will not be happening. They're moving the Testa Jarama over in Madrid. I won't read all of it out. It's a lengthy statement. It's a powerful one indeed, though. But I do recommend, if you want to see it, Formula E's website has got it. Their social media has it. We've all been monitoring the tragic situation in Valencia, where flash floods have devastated the region and claimed many lives. Our thoughts are with everyone affected by these terrible events, and we at Formula E are looking at how we can practically support the region during this awful time. Following consultation, we've decided to not proceed with our pre-season test in Valencia, planned for November 4th through 7th. While it may have been possible to go ahead logistically, it is important not to create any distraction or use valuable resources that are much better served supporting the local community. They've also said that they're going to move. Therefore, we've taken the decision to secure an alternative location, and Circuito de Jarama in Madrid will host both the official test and women's test next week from the 5th to the 8th of November. The full schedule will be revealed in due course, and there's a quite emotional and genuinely heartfelt part of the end where they say, our first thoughts are with the community of Valencia. The city has a special place in our hearts. It has been ever present on our calendar since 2017, and we have recently moved their operations base there. It is a second home for Formula E. We will support the community to recover from these tragic events in any way we can, and ensure that while our testing continues in Madrid, it is done with the utmost sensitivity. Can't say much better.
Can't really follow that up. I mean,
one thing I can follow it up with is just pointing out that, like, hey, those other resources that they're talking about, like, that's emergency services. A big reason why people were like up in arms about the 2020 Indy 500 was that, I mean, yeah, they're holding it behind closed doors, but also, like, hospital facilities needed that to take care of sick patients. Now they need it here to take care of the injured and the ailing because of these floods.
Mm-hmm.
In case something were to have gone wrong at this Valencia test, it would have just added undue stress on top of it. Yeah.
The people in that area are dealing with enough as it is. They don't need any additional weight on their infrastructure at the moment.
Indeed. It's emergency services, it's helicopters, it's ambulances, it's hospital beds potentially if the worst were to happen. Let's not forget the former retest had a fire last year. That could have been so much worse for the people that are affected by it at Mahindra. So it's not unthinkable that something like that could happen. It very nearly did that for that very Formula E preseason test last year. So it's a very much a real possibility. And yeah, I'm glad that Formula E very quickly decided to, as far as I'm concerned, in my personal opinion, do the right thing and just move it to a different part of the country and just support the locals however they can in Valencia, because I think that's the main point. And that brings us to MotoGP. We're recording this late Thursday night on media day, full disclosure, after press conferences and all that on Thursday. They're in Sepang right now for their penultimate round of the championship this weekend. I tip my hat and I applaud all three of the big names in this sport who were very open and sincere, and they made it abundantly clear that they are not comfortable with the idea of a race at Valencia in 2 weeks' time. That was Bagnaia, that was Martin, and that was Marc Marquez. The quote from Marquez is the one that got me the most, where he said, I don't know why we're even thinking about a Grand Prix in Valencia in 2 weeks' time when many people haven't got a home to go home to right now.
Yeah.
And that, I think, sums it up better than anything I could say on the matter. As of now, we don't know what Dorna is set to do. There's been a lot of speculation about possibilities. I'll lay some of them out right here. they could straight up cancel that round, not replace it, and all of a sudden Sepang is the actual title decider. That's a possibility. We don't know for sure. Again, the possibility of Sepang doubleheadering is probably not an option due to lack of tires available at the venue and just lack of programming, because Sepang's track is pretty booked up between now and basically Christmas and the rest of the year. So a second race at Sepang isn't really viable. The most realistic option or sensible option that I've heard is potentially going back to Qatar on December the 8th, roughly 5 weeks from now. Of course, there's pros and cons. The big con being it stinks that a lot of the humanitarian element of the sport, the crew chiefs, the mechanics, the traveling circus that is motorsport in a global series, is going to have their Christmas taken out. This championship was supposed to end in 2 weeks' time. Now it's going to be 5 weeks' time. And I know people like Matt Oxley, who's again one of the best journalists in the business in this game, as I openly said on Twitter to another one of my friends and journalists, Lewis Duncan at Crash.net, that he's already, and in his own humorous way, begging his wife for forgiveness already for the length of a global championship that's will set to have 22 rounds and go from early March till early November. And now there's a possibility of adding a 20th, or delaying a 20th race, I should say, really, until early December, the same weekend that Formula One has their title decider, their final round in Abu Dhabi, which again is just not ideal for anybody involved. But that's the nature of motorsports. Sometimes you've got to compromise, and
someone's got to hold the L here, unfortunately. And honestly, whatever Dorna decides to do, I probably won't be opposed to it at the end of the day, because there's bigger things at hand here. That said, canceling the final round suddenly this weekend becomes a whole lot more critical, for obvious reasons.
Just to lay out the math, if you don't know already, Jorge Martin has a 17-point lead in the championship with one round less to go and only 37 points available, as opposed to 74 if that 20th race at Valencia does not happen and it's not replaced. It makes Martin a massive favourite for the championship right there and then. He could win it at the sprint on Saturday, potentially, if the math falls a certain way. So just to add context, yes, losing a round would have a huge effect on the championship, potentially. But yeah, I can only echo Cam's sentiment. There is no good option here. It's a bad beat no matter which way you slice it. What's the least bad option? I don't have a strong opinion on this. If you feel like you've got to get 20 races in, and I can understand why, because TV money is TV money. You've got to get your income together. You've already lost two rounds this year as it is. This was meant to be a 22-round championship. We've only had 19 races, or 18 races technically so far. The max you're going to get is 20. You've probably already lost money as it is, from a business standpoint. And look, I don't want to revolve it around the holy dollar, but we all know that's what makes it all go around here when it comes to motorsport. And well, Dorna, if I was running a company like that, cancelling a round outright would be the last resort. But they may not have a choice in the matter, depending on how this turns out. I mean, I don't really know what the best option is. I think on a human standpoint, it sucks if Dubai happens on December 8th, but I understand why. Yeah, go on, RJ.
Yeah, it's Qatar.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. I think that is like the obvious option.
Bad option.
Yeah, I think that was what my gut was telling me when I first saw the rumor drop. I mean, I saw Simon Patterson at the race tweet about it. that was the overriding sentiment, that the overriding feeling in the paddock right now apparently is we're not going to Valencia. For those who don't know, the track itself is relatively fine, only some minor damage here and there, but it's the access roads to get to the circuit that are in severe damage, basically. Yeah. So getting in and getting out would be virtually impossible right now.
And then you also have to consider, you know, what has the damage been to transit? What does that look like for the bus lines, tram lines, train lines, etc.? Forgive me, I don't know what the transit situation is in Valencia, but that's also something to consider. Not to make things about my passion of Japanese motorsport, but that was a big reason why Super GT postponed their summer Suzuka race to December. The track itself would have been fine. Thankfully, there was minimal loss of life due to Typhoon Shanshan, minimal damage in that situation. But train lines were impacted because of that. It was going to be difficult for people to get into and out of the circuit. So similar situation here with Valencia, likely.
Yeah, ultimately, the infrastructure needs to be able to support the race. And right now, what infrastructure there is there needs to be there to support the human element.
You'd still be expecting over 60,000 people on race day. Title decider of Valencia, it's always been a popular high setting round. Most MotoGP races in Spain are. Valencia is no exception. Right now, from what I've seen from the video footage, no chance is my honest to God assessment of that. I'm no expert, but sadly, when you see stacks of cars piled up and heavily damaged roads, it doesn't feel likely that this is going to happen. Again, we're not saying this for sure yet. I need to make this abundantly clear. We have not had confirmation on this yet. We are speculating.
We're still in the speculation.
We're awaiting word from Dorna, because Dorna has not made a decision yet.
And I feel, and again, I agree with Patterson on this, I kind of feel bad for Dorna on this one, because really they kind of have to make a call before the mainline racing of this weekend starts. Because from a sporting standpoint, and that's last on my priority list, do not get me wrong, it would be categorically unfair for Bagnaia and Martin to take to the track on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, not knowing whether this is the final round of the championship or not. That would suck. That would affect how they race. I get that it's not their fault. It's not Dorna's fault. There's no one to blame here, but it's just I know it's a horrible situation.
It just sucks for everyone involved. The sport at large has been dealt a shitty hand, and we don't know how they're going to respond to it, because we just haven't heard from Dorna yet. I'm sure they're unsure on how to proceed, because they're having to weigh up the options on their own side of things, because then they have to get this whole circus on the road in a few weeks' time, where that was not supposed to happen, as you mentioned. Effectively, this entire garage is going to lose their Christmas over it.
Yeah, it's a logistical turbo nightmare. This is the worst case scenario if you're in the logistics department of this series, because now what do you do? Like, you've now got hours, which we're dealing with hours here rather than days. We're dealing with hours to probably, you're probably going to have to make a decision, a no-win situation that is going to have a dramatic effect on your championship.
A season-defining decision with no time to weigh up your options.
And also postseason testing, right? Supposed to be right after that.
Day after, yeah. Day after, and everyone's going to be there. Everyone's going to have their 2025 machinery. It's a huge, highly important. I mean, this preseason test is even more important than most years, because we're heading into 2025 and an engine freeze for next year. So getting as much information about their engines for next year is imperative, because once they homologate these engines for next season, they are locked in place unless you're Honda and Yamaha until 2027 with the new regulations, and the new 850cc engines come into play. So,
sporting element is the last thing on our mind, but for the constructors, those 2025 prototypes are going to be the rock upon which you build your church for the next 2 years. You can't afford to miss this. You can't afford to waste any time. And suddenly you are now far more under the gun from just the situation at hand to get it right out of the box, or you are setting yourself up for failure, not just next year, but the year after.
Yeah, there is a huge amount on the plate and what have you, that these guys are all going to have to weigh up. There's so many stakeholders involved. And like I said, there is no easy decision. There is no... this is a no-win situation. It's a Kobayashi Maru in every sense of the term. There is no good option here. They're just going to have to figure something out. And, when that happens, we'll put it all over our social media. We'll let you be the first to know. I'll probably write something on the website about it over the weekend. But again, we can only express our deepest sympathies with everyone in Eastern Spain right now. None of this really matters in the grand scheme of things. We have to do our jobs as podcasters and report the news sometimes, and the news is horrible.
Yeah. It's not fun. I guess we're most qualified to talk about motorsport more than anything. And I guess we should get into, what happened in Thailand this past week.
Yeah, we kind of gave the game away a little bit, if you're good at your math, about how this has played out. But we'll talk a little bit about Thailand before we wrap this up. Honors pretty even between the two main title contenders. And I say two main now because mathematically, Marc Marquez and Nenea Bastianini are out of the running. You may have seen MotoGP social media updates now call it the rematch, because that's what it is officially now, with only two contenders left. Nenea Bastianini did take the sprint, dominated, pretty much led from turn one, didn't look back. The sprint was probably most remembered for a late lunge that Jorge Martin sent on Francesco Bagnaia for second place. Martin took second, Bagnaia third. At the time, it pushed the championship lead out to 22 points for Martin. And it was significant for those who maybe are a little slow on the math. What that 22-point lead meant at that point was that Bagnaia could no longer control his fate. At that point, Bagnaia can no longer win the championship just by running the table. So it's out of his hands. It's what I've often nicknamed the snookers required.
Required mode. Run rate. Formula One meet MotoGP.
Yes, here we are. That was that after the sprint. You could tell in that Ducati camp. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Grand Prix itself, rain came down on Sunday morning. A lot of rain. It's a bit of a Thailand tradition at this point. You get some rain somewhere in the weekend, and it came down in spades on Sunday morning. Moto3 race was dry. Moto2 race was a bit of both and called off early. We'll talk about a little bit more about that towards the end of the show. But MotoGP was wet. It didn't really rain during the race, but it didn't dry at enough of a rate for it to be a real flag-to-flag race in that sense. And Pecco Bagnaia dominated, took the front early on after an early Jorge Martin going wide moment at turn three, didn't really look back. The only person who was really close to him was Marc Marquez. He hassled and he hurried Bagnaia. He was going for the win, tried a couple of last minute lunges at the final corner, didn't quite work out. Bagnaia cut him back both times, and then Marquez tucked the front, tried to save it, couldn't hold on to it. Kerb got in the way, launched him off the bike. Game over, championship over for Marc Marquez. And this was only a few laps after Nenea Bastianini had crashed it himself, and he was out of the championship mathematically. So just like that, we went from four title contenders mathematically to two. Jorge Martin at that point took a pretty comfortable second. There was no one really. He didn't have the pace to challenge Pecco. He was faster than the second pack behind him, and that was good enough for Martin. He took the 20 points in second. Pedro Acosta would come through for third, learning his first wet moto GP race on the fly, charged through Fabio Di Giantonio on the Ducati and the two factory KTMs of Brad Binder and Jack Miller. Yes, Jack Miller was contending for a podium finish until the penultimate lap of this race. It's been quite a topsy-turvy weekend. But Acosta gets his fifth podium finish of this season in third. I mean, Cam, what did you make of that race in general?
Surprisingly tame for a wet MotoGP race overall. Other than Marc Marquez, of course, who was riding like a man possessed and unfortunately crashed like a man possessed. Trying a bit too hard, I would say, Mark, because he definitely had the speed, but maybe not the best strategy of how to approach it. I mean, Bagnaia did what he needed to do. He's kind of arrested the slide from the last couple weekends. But as we mentioned with the sprint, it's out of its hands. If Martin wins out, or if he wins out from here, he kind of needs shenanigans, of which there have been plenty this season with MotoGP.
Yeah.
This has been a season of shenanigans. But man, if he doesn't clean house in Sepang, regardless of this outcome, whatever happens with the final race, it's a big ask.
It is a big ask, and you could. I remember watching the sprint and seeing the Ducati camp.
I would like to subvert the insane Davide Tardozzi bullshit. The subdued Davide Tardozzi bullshit, because he looked like someone had just canceled his favorite TV show.
Yeah.
He looked distraught.
He looked like a man who had just found out that Firefly wasn't getting a second season. It was just...
damn.
Very tragic. It looked like people had dressed at red for a funeral. Like his girlfriend, Pecco's wife was there, and Gigi Delinea was there, and Davide Tardozzi, and they all looked despondent. I think they knew, math-wise, what that pass from Martin in the sprint signified.
And you know what that pass was as well? And just to say, I'm kind of sad I wasn't on the F1 show yesterday, because Max Verstappen, you escaped this time. Because I was sick of your bullshit, finally, after years. But Jorge Martin kind of took a page out of that book of playing to the whistle by pushing the limits on Bagnaia and using up his track limits extension tokens to do it.
Yeah, he did. When he passed Bagnaia, he immediately put two wheels on the green on corner exit. And it got a bit chipper between the two of them, because Bagnaia immediately accused Martin with our own Mr. Lewis Sutherby in his post-race debrief or post-sprint debrief that he accused Martin of going on the green four times. He did not. He only did it twice. That was one of the two, but Martin was not in violation of track limits. He did get a warning, but he never went over that three limit for a sprint race that warranted either a position drop for a final lap excursion or a long lap penalty for repeated offenses. It was a sneaky tactic, but a clever way of gaming the rules, so to speak. It was a hellacious move, and Martin didn't quite get it fully stuck, but he used the track to his advantage, and isn't that the whole point?
It's what he gets paid to do. Yeah. But Aprilia just emptied the Brinks truck for him for next year.
Yeah, it's what you got to do.
And Lord, they need the help. Was this another anonymous weekend from Aprilia?
Yeah, they might as well have not bothered. Maverick Viñales was okay, but besides that, Aleix Espargaró is already enjoying retirement. Like, he is enjoying his full body cardio workouts at the back of the field right now.
Lord knows he'll enjoy this bike more than the next one.
Probably, but still. Shout out to Martin. That was a ballsy pass, no matter which way you slice it. He did not have to take that level of risk on that one, and he did, and he was rewarded for it on that one because he that was the Michael Schumacher in Japan 2000. He just shattered the morale of the garage qualifying lap. That was what that felt like. And hell, I remember even Davide Tardozzi said after the sprint, if Martin wins it from here, he deserves it, is what he basically said. It was almost like he was like a
resignation.
Yeah, he had one hand on the towel, ready to throw it into the ring, I think, as he said that, because he felt like that might have been a kill shot. And look, Bagnaia did what he had to do on Sunday. He had to. It was a must-win race, and he won it. And it just goes to show you that Bagnaia is 17 points back, and he's won half the races this season. It's wild.
It's the sprint has been so poor for him relatively. I mean, Jason in our server has a rolling points table of points scored in the sprint and points overall. And the disparity between Martin and Bagnaia is just enormous.
36 points. Jorge Martin has been 36 points better in the sprint than Bagnaia this season in the 18 sprint races. To be honest, they've actually won the same number of sprints, six each, this season. But what I didn't realize, and I wrote about this last year in my end of season review, the Jorge Martin's flaw last year was the problem. He didn't have enough podium finishes. This year, he's had 14 of them in Grand Prix this year. I think he only had 7 last year, Martin, in the championship.
It was very boom or bust last year. This year, the floor is much, much higher.
Yeah. If you add the sprints and the Grand Prix, Jorge Martin has finished in second 15 times this season, which is another one of those little wild stats that I like to pull out every once in a while. But the floor's a lot higher, and now he's in a position where he's got Bagnaia on the ropes. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, for Pecco, the mission is simple. Win everything from here.
Yeah, you have to win and hope. Whether it be Marquez that gets in the way, hey, it might be Enea Bastianini, because Bastianini he's made it very clear this morning there will be no team orders. He will not follow them. He will not support Ducati.
What's the point? He ain't there next year.
Yeah, he's made it very clear. It doesn't make any sense for him to do it. He's not going to take team orders. Bagnaia's on his own, basically. He's in this for himself. And hey, let's not forget who won at Sepang last year. It was Bastianini, who dominated. Led pretty much lights the flag at Sepang last year.
It's a very tire-heavy race. It always is. That's where Bastianini comes to the fore. And the thing is, if he takes those winning points off of Bagnaia, then he's in real trouble.
Yeah, very much so. The sprint is going to be absolutely critical for the championship at Sepang on Saturday, depending on how that turns out in the end. Shout out to Pedro Acosta again. That was a very, very good ride from him. I like that he crashed in the sprint again. I don't like that, but he crashed in the sprint from P3, said, okay, I've got to dial it down a bit now. This is getting ridiculous. Because if you include his injury, 5 straight non-scores.
Not great.
As great as his rookie campaign has been, that is an issue. He leads the league in crashes.
It's been in the second half of the season. I feel like he's been trying to get blood from a stone with the KTM. We know about their rear chatter issues, and we see how he and Binder have to ride the bike to get lap time out of it. It's not really sustainable over a race distance.
No, it's not. And he died down a bit. This was his first MotoGP wet race. He had to manage it on the fly. It was a bit rough to start off with, but once he got it down, he was flying through that field, and he charged up to third place. The fight he had with Jack Miller is worth the price of admission alone. That is, go out of your way to find that fight. It was a fantastic wheel-to-wheel scrap between him and Miller, who, bless him, was so close to a podium finish. We all know Miller is very good in wet conditions. wasn't to be on this one, but still, I think that's Miller's best result of the year in fourth place this season. So a good day at the office from Jack. And I haven't said that for a while. Bless his heart.
First bright spot feels like all year.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like only three riders on this grid all year who have not been on a Ducati have had a podium finish this year. Maverick Viñales has won his win at COTA. Brad Binder has his podium from the opening round in Qatar. Pedro Acosta has five of them. Just thought I'd point out what the minerals on this
rookie. The lows are quite low, but the highs, they're high enough for me to semi-excuse it. He does have to turn it down for his own good, though, because
he made it as such.
His shoulder isn't going to hold out continuing to do that.
Indeed. Couple of little extra bullet points before we get out of here that's worth a mention. First up, we have a new Moto2 world champion, and his name is GoldenEye. Iagura.
It is no longer the Agura surprise. It is the Agura expectation. Oh, it feels so good. I feel like I'm celebrating this 2 years late.
Mm. Go on, RJ.
First Japanese rider to win any MotoGP World Championship in 15 years. Hiroshi Ayama was the last.
Yeah.
And also, like, is MotoGP just like, thank goodness we don't have to worry about the dilemma of our Moto2 champion not going up to the premier class next year.
That would have been a bit of a pickle, wouldn't it? Yeah, it's significant in many ways. Like as RJ quite alluded to, first Japanese MotoGP champion of any kind in any class in 15 years. Also, the first ever MotoGP world champion to come from the Asia Talent Cup as well. They've done a lot of work, Dorna, in trying to raise the profile of bike racing and get more young talent coming through from Asia, Southeast Asia, that part of the world in general, and they now have a world champion they can claim. And it was very cool. We actually got to celebrate as well on the podium with a lot of the Asia Talent Cup current roster, which was very, very cool to see in the celebrations as well. He'd finish on the podium in the race. Aaron Canning got his third win of the year. It was a race that was rained off with about four laps to go because the rain came down. It was a dry race initially. There's no flag to flag in the junior classes anymore. So once the rain came down, the stewards rightly called it. And Aaron Canning got his third win of the year, but all Iagura had to do was finish in the top five, and he did. And that was enough for him to seal the title. So congratulations to him. Tremendous talent. And this is not a shot at him. He should have won this in 2022. Lack of maybe bottle or temperament towards the end of that season derailed it for him. 2023, he had that horrible wrist injury in training that derailed his entire season. In a sea of inconsistency, mistakes, and people tripping over each other in Moto2 this year, Agura was, by a country mile, the most consistent man in the field. And he ran away with it down the stretch of this championship campaign. And it's been a long time coming, but I'm glad Agura finally gets his flowers. He's earned this. He's had to graft very hard to win this championship, and I'm glad he's got his moment, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, so close. So close in 2022. And then last year, I mean, not that we knew it at the time to start the season, but he was riding in so much pain. He destroyed his wrist. It was far worse than we were led to believe to start the season. And all the promise from 22 seemed to melt away. And then this year, he just never let up scoring points.
Indeed, just kept the momentum rolling. His only real threat for a good chunk of the season was Sergio Garcia. And again, it's hard not to feel a bit bad for Garcia. That shoulder injury, again, derailed his season. It was such a promising campaign from the young Spaniard. And unfortunately, that he never really got his form back after the shoulder injury, which is just completely destroyed his season. He's now in a five-way...
He's looked nothing like his usual self.
Yeah, he's now in a five-way Spanish dogfight for the runner-up spot between Canet, Garcia, Aldeguer, Gonzalez, and Lopez. 32 points separates those five riders. Also, first non-Calex Moto2 world title since 2012, where some guy called Mark Marquez won the Moto2 championship.
Oh.
What happened to him?
Rotuzar.
Yeah.
Joined the Italians.
Congrats to the Boscanoro team. Congrats to their chassis development team. They cracked it this year. It's
been a long time coming. Like, the Kalex domination seemed it was never going to end. And then it seemed to end overnight.
Yeah. We joked about the hot streak that Aldeguer had at the end of last season. And because Boscanoro speed up everyone to describe him, have had a tendency of being inconsistent with their chassis. We didn't really read too much into it. But then it just kept going and going and going into this season. And they never really
stopped reeling off wins.
Yeah, the Boscanoros, four of the top six are on their chassis right now. Agüero, Garcia, Aldeguer, and Lopez all in the top six of the standings as we speak. And they're going to get more on the grid next year because we know Mark VDS is switching over next season as well. And they're a Moto2 powerhouse, and they'll be one to watch next year, certainly. So keep half an eye on that. But congrats to the Boscanoro guys. Congrats to Agüero. Congrats to the Asia Talent Cup. And hey, one more interesting bit of inters. If Jorge Martin wins the world championship, it'll be the first time in GP history that a Red Bull rookie graduate would have all three major world titles at the same time. They're two-thirds of the way there. With Agüero and David Alonso, Martin could make it a hat-trick if he can close it out, depending on how that season plays out. One more note as well. We got the official confirmation on Tuesday via a slickly put together social media video. Andrea Iannone is back on a MotoGP bike this weekend at Sepang. He's filling in for Fabio Di Giantonio for the last two rounds of the championship. He's off to get his shoulder reconstructed. Iannone takes his place. The Maniac back in MotoGP after 5 years away.
Ever think that we would see Dirty Ian on a Ducati MotoGP bike again? I didn't
think he'd ever come back. There's a lot of ins and outs to it. I'm curious to see what he's got left in the tank.
Because the last time we saw him on one of these, we were very far removed from the ride height device, aerodynamic crap Michelin front tire era.
Apparently, the boss himself, Valentino Rossi, gave him the call and said, hey, can you ride our bike for the last two races? And Iannone, apparently, with no hesitation whatsoever, said yes, which I thought was quite funny. A lot of people in the paddock have reported he's a changed man after serving his four-year drug ban. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. I think there's a lot of ums and ahs you can make about a drug cheat and how we go about their rehabilitation towards taking part in a sport again. There's a lot of dialogue you can make about that. I'm glad that he's been well received in a sense, and that I do generally believe in second chances, and I generally believe in forgiveness. He seems like a man who has humbled himself with his time away from the sport, and I wish him the best. I wish him nothing but success. I hope it works out. He was excellent in World Superbikes this year over as the one of these satellite riders. He was second in the independents this year with only been beaten by Petrix with the Barney team over there in World Supers, and we'll see how it works out in the end. But that just about does it for this entire podcast on this one. Again, MotoGP at Sepang this weekend. Again, stay tuned to Motorsport 101 over the course of the next couple of days. I will inevitably have a write up on the website if and when we get news regarding what will happen with that title decider at Valencia. I've said it before, I don't think it's going to happen, but again, we're speculating. As soon as we know, we'll update our site and socials, and we'll keep you in the loop as best as we can. And of course, one more time, our thoughts and prayers to everyone out there in Eastern Spain. We wish the very best in there, and hopefully people can get back on their feet as best they can in the coming days, weeks, months. It's a tragedy. It's a natural disaster. And sometimes motorsport really doesn't matter when things like this happen. But we owe it to you to do our best to wrap our heads around it. And that's what we do here at Motorsport 101. We'll be back next week to talk about the MotoGP round at Sepang. And of course, Formula One as well for the Brazilian Grand Prix this weekend as well. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening. Sayonara. Take care.